I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
With the various people and someone that I've wanted to speak to for quite a long time, Mr. Scott Hutchison.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
You've got 3 sold out shows ahead of you in Glasgow.
I know.
How's that?
Yeah, no, that's good. That is really good. It's a really nice way to end a tour. You know, to have something. It's like sort of the light at the end of the tunnel. There's been these Barrowland shows that, you know, it's kind of like a guarantee that they're going to be fucking fun.
Yeah.
So, I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Well, the last time I think I saw you, you were in Block and you'd had a Balkan. Yeah, and I think you were ready to call it quits.
Well, that was probably around that time, yeah.
Not like, I mean, just inform, because the Balkan was so potent.
Yeah, no, I can't really do that anymore. I remember taking, like, you know, having like 3 or 4 of those at one point, and then the last time I had one, it was right. I was right at the bar, and I was a little bit sick on my hand. So that was my last foray into Balkans, and I don't think I ever need to have one again.
I won't point you in the direction of a case of the stuff just now.
God, is there some over there?
There's an actual case.
I'm not interested. If anyone has frost on their car windscreen, then I'd recommend it, but otherwise, no.
So this is a bit of a different podcast, because we're going to be talking about anxiety and mental health.
It's free therapy.
Yeah,
that's why I took you up on the offer, because otherwise I'd have to pay for it.
Well, I'm kind of using you as well, so
let's do it.
So I had written a piece not long ago, because I'd just about hit rock bottom, and it included one of your songs. And funnily enough, your Painting a Panic Attack, which. It was actually a point that I couldn't actually read the album title, because it actually almost brought one on, and I thought, this is ridiculous. I guess, so what is it, anxiety that you have, or
well,
how does it manifest?
I mean, it comes in different forms. I've got, it's a much more manageable thing for me now. The time of the writing the album was a time when I didn't understand it. You know, like, I'd completely understood that I am drawn to dark thoughts and, you know, propelled towards that side of things, and that's what's made me write. But I was, I almost liked it at that point, because it was at a certain level. And then I think it completely overstepped the mark at one point, and my first panic attack was on a plane.
Yeah.
And I thought I was dying. I thought I was having a stroke, actually, which for someone who was, you know, had my lifestyle at that point, I didn't think that would be such a strange thing, because, I mean, I've also been prone to, I think I was using alcohol to kind of dull things a lot. But then when that happened, I just got a huge wake-up call, and then I was driven to understand it a little bit more, and that's when I sort of realised that I had aspects of my brain that I couldn't control.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened, I guess, two or three summers ago. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was it was the point where I started to sort of define the feelings I'd had, as opposed to just accepting them and using them.
Yeah,
because they can seem like quite, I suppose in my position, that feeling can, it's like a badge of honour or something, you know, like, and then, and it, like I said, it completely overstepped the mark, and it was no longer something that I was fond of.
The way that you were coping with it.
Or just the general way of, you know, how it stopped being something that I could understand and deal with, and became something that I didn't understand anymore. I needed help to understand it, and that's something that I continue to need help understanding. You know.
So was it just in social situations that you were getting them, or was it in private as well?
Yeah, it was totally private. I could just be like standing waiting for a train and I feel like I'm going to pass out, you know, and I didn't get it. I thought there was something really, actually it was something in your piece that struck a chord with me, where I was like, I've got something really wrong with me.
Yeah.
I thought it was a medical condition, which it is, but I thought there was something else, and you were talking about how, like, oh, actually, I'm in good health, better than ever, but this thing makes me think I've got, like, I don't know, motor neuron disease or something, and I couldn't quite understand it. And that's what started to worry me, it would come on at very random times,
mm-hmm.
you know, not, the triggers weren't okay, there were triggers that I understood, and they were, I could deal with them, but then there were times where I was like, why is this happening? Why is this happening right now? I don't understand. I do know now also that like alcohol had a huge part to play in that.
Yeah.
And I've sort of, apart from today, I've sort of got a good handle on where that's going to, if I do this, that's going to leave me in this state tomorrow, you know? But it was such a vicious cycle at that point in time. After that, after I had that episode on the plane, I was then drinking every night, also taking medication, and waking up and doing the same thing again. So sort of like doubling down on all that, just to try and
work it out.
Keep it in check. Yeah.
And so I was. I was drinking as well to try and dull it down. And
it works.
It does. And then there's other times that you think, okay, this is really... I get like you. It's... Your heart's racing and it's the hangover fear that comes in that you think, okay, well, I'm going to have to top up to kind of keep this feeling down again.
Absolutely. It works really quickly. It's the quickest thing and it's available.
Yeah. I know that I'm not an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I know that I was only using it, but I suppose that is a form of alcoholism.
It's a form of it, isn't it? Yeah, it's just like a question that I've asked myself. I kind of answered it, I guess. I took 2 months off drinking, and then almost just to tell myself that I'm not, I don't need it. I mean, if anyone is listening and is wondering if they're drinking heavily and they're wondering why they feel like like the way they do every day, then like those 2 months were just anxiety free, like 100% anxiety, really? Like everything, all the symptoms, like the sort of like little kind of dizzy spells and heart palpitations, they were gone.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from that time.
So, obviously you said that the first moment was when you were on the plane. Was that the first moment that you can actually remember of it happening?
Yeah, no, totally, that was it. That was the first point. It just wasn't something that I think before it had been a kind of mild depression that turned into this, like, well, when you have one, it's not so much about having another one, it's the fear of having another one.
Yeah.
And I was obviously in a lot of situations where things were kind of heightened, and also I was on planes a lot, and after that it just became, like, you know, my life, my job was feeding into this so much that, you know, I didn't want to be doing what I was doing anymore, because I thought this is the reason why I am having these episodes, and that started to resent what I did, my work.
And am I allowed to ask why do you think that it's why this came? Why do you feel that you started to get anxious or you started to get panic attacks?
Yeah, again, I think one of the things that scared me was I couldn't put my finger on it, because actually my life at the time was really good. Really busy, like, touring, doing what I supposed was, you know, my ultimate life goal, which is touring, and was in a really happy relationship. That's what shocked me at the time. On that day, I remember being really fucking happy, and that's what scared me, because I didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I've spent a lot of time since then trying to put my finger on why these things happen.
See, I was the same. Like, it was 2 months ago. I was really bad. I got agoraphobia, like, about 7 or 8 years ago, and I was really horrific. Couldn't leave the house or anything.
Yeah.
And then I'm doing stuff now that I've wanted to do I work in music full time.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, when you're your happiest. And I don't know if it's because I'm like, what if this all fucking goes away? What if I fail? What if I'm back to square one again?
So, yeah.
I don't know if that is the element of your kind of subconscious coming through, going,
could be,
you will fail.
Oh yeah, that's always there. But like I said, it's like funny to think about how all these things that you just come to accept over your lifetime as part of your character, that's what makes you, like, it's what makes you create things. But at the same time, you know, should we glorify it? I think I made a habit of doing so over the last however many years, and then that's what shocked me. It was like, oh, this thing that had come to... It had actually given me a lot. You know, that's the weird thing. The feeling that way has brought me an enormous amount of, like, satisfaction.
Oh, totally.
You know?
It's like a bad... Well, a friend that you kind of want to have, but you don't.
Yeah. I don't anymore. I mean, it's like... get asked quite often, like, if I could have a really stress-free, anxiety-free, free from depression 2 years and produce, like... an album that I thought was shit. Would I take that? And I'm like,
no.
Well, probably not. No, probably not. But, you know, it's an interesting idea. And I'm definitely... I think... Do you not feel, though, that haven't gone to the extremes? You know, like... That's... sort of a privilege.
Oh, totally.
You know?
We kind of... We're one in so many people that have gone to those, like you say, those extremes, and you just... I wish sometimes... You know, you wish you could just touch someone's arm just to let them almost feel just for a moment, almost like the Green Mile. John Coffey.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And just to kind of go, right, that's what I am feeling right now.
Yeah.
But almost, I'm quite selfish as well, because I'm like, no, you don't have a fucking clue until you've gone through what I've gone through. Then...
Yeah.
I guess.
Do you know, also the assumption is that a lot of people haven't, but I found fairly recently with a sort of public outburst that so many people I knew had been through something similar, and it was all like, I was, people coming forward, I was like, you yeah. feel like this?
Yeah.
And I think that's what shocked me when I thought I was one of the other minority who were experiencing these things, and I was actually not in the minority, although I think I am definitely drawn to extreme feeling, and I like it, like, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of... The middle ground is sort of makes me feel a bit sick. I don't really know what to do with that. So, you know...
Oh, hold on to your heart.
I'll talk about in a bit how you kind of overcame things, but I want to talk about kind of stuff away from that a bit. And just because generally the way that I do the podcast is that I talk to people about music that they really identify with, and obviously part of my piece was songs that kind of really got me through difficult times, but I also talk to artists about songs that have kind of soundtracked their lives. So if we could just pick a few songs to kind of go through that you could talk about that perhaps have been really kind of special to you. That would be fantastic.
I mean, and a huge soundtrack to my calmness has been Max Richter. Memory House being one of my favourite albums ever. And there's a song on that called Twins, brackets Prague, that, I mean, I would just, if I was, anything was coming on, I was starting to feel, you know, overwhelmed. I would retreat to his music, and it's funny, you talk about soundtracks to life, that his is truly, in the truest sense, a soundtrack. You know, you feel like it kind of, it puts a little sort of veneer on everything, and I really need his music, especially when I'm on tour, to just escape somewhere else. Max Richter has saved my life, you know.
And obviously, well, it's annoying people like me that contact you saying or write about, you know, how much your music has meant. I think just in the way that you write your lyrics is unreal. You've managed to soundtrack two breakups and my anxiety, which is pretty good going.
Okay.
So
I don't know if I should be pleased or not, though. Like,
no, it's a good thing. There's been a lot of tears.
Okay.
So do you get quite a lot of people expressing that to you, that your new music is like, oh my god, you don't know what it's done?
Absolutely. Yes. And no, it is. I don't take it for granted either, but at the same time, it's like, it's funny because at the time of writing and whatever is being happening is usually past, and then further on, then I'll go and meet people on tour, and even if you're talking about this last album, but and then going even further back to this like second album, which a lot of people talk about in terms of like helping them through difficult times, like those feelings I don't have any of those anymore. It's completely changed. You know, I've got things, thoughts that I attach to those songs. But yeah, it's strange for me to then they've transplanted themselves completely into someone else's life. So I do get it a lot, and I love it. I had the parents of a, so I think he was about mid-20s guy, got in touch saying, "Oh, our son told us that you, essentially, your one of your songs saved his life. But he was gonna commit suicide, and your song essentially told him not to do so." And I just, you know, having, because I've been close,
yeah,
and that kind of thing. It sort of, I don't know, it's like, I know what other artists have done for me, so to know that I've done that for other people is wonderful.
Yeah.
An album as a whole that I love is Lucky by Nada Surf. I mean, like, See These Bones, that was that to me is a person in an album and a song. My girlfriend Courtney is like completely embodied in that album, and every time I listen to it, it's just like, she's like, she's there, you know, and that's really helped me a lot. It's really strange to have an album be a person.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've kind of thought about it in that way. But it's true. And I think it's like, that brings a comfort in itself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the music's just like super comforting because it's got amazing harmonies. And the thing I love about Nada Surf is you don't give a shit what year it is. They still sound like 1995.
Yeah.
And they've done it on their new album as well. And I love that band.
I think Rogue Wave are a bit like that as well.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, no, there's a few bands of that time that are just like,
yeah, fuck David off. Bazan. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. It's true.
Everyone's right and no one is sorry. That's the start and the end of the story. From the sharks and the jets to the call in the morning. Everyone's right and no one is sorry. Sharks and the jets to the call in the morning. And life is just bets anyway. Look alive, see these.
they might, no one's immune to misfiring and acting on the wrong clues and thinking it's time to redo and redo. I feel the rain in the movies and the talk before the screen lights. I hear strings in the park. I don't like to call a ride except when it's too late at night. I mostly just think in the dark. Look alive, see these bones. What you are now, we were once. But just like we are, you'll be dust. And just like we are,
nice to know that the album also reminds her of me.
Yeah. And the same album.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been a...
That's one for the wedding then.
It might be. Yeah. That'd be good. I'll just have to... Do you know what? Matthew Cos started following us on Twitter, so I'm going to ask him.
Could you imagine though?
I know.
Oh,
maybe.
My God.
Maybe. I don't know.
And... have there been any newer artists that have come through that have kind of really stood out for you over the last few years?
I mean, well, is Withered Hand new?
I would say
Can we call that new? Withered Hand is... well, you know, like, I have a friendship with Dan and that adds to it as well. So, like, he... his personality is completely evident in all those songs, and it just, it, you know, he's capable of brightening any moment, you know.
La 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 la. Like, should I be passing this bread along to you? And I don't really know what the wine was for. 'Cause if it was Jesus' blood, wouldn't there be more? I'm knocking on Kevin's front door, singing religious songs. And getting the words wrong, my hair's getting too long. This congregation, religious songs. I'm getting the words wrong, my hair's getting too long. And they're saying, how does he really expect to be happy when he listens to death metal bands? La 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 la. You stole my heart and I stole your underwear. You said religion is bullshit, it's all about metaphor. Well, if I need a fence to sit on, man, I'll sit on your dream and off Babylon's horse. Singing religious songs and getting the words wrong. My hair's getting too long for this congregation. Religious songs, I'm getting the words wrong. My hair's getting too long. And they're saying, how does he really expect to be happy when he listens to death metal bands? La 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 la. When they ask me how I am, I lie, say I'm doing fine. Still manage to tell me you're on an easy leg holiday, but that's okay. Remember you thought I was gay. Well, I beat myself off when I sleep on your futon. I walk in the rain with my second hand suit on. Myself off when I sleep on your futon. I walk in the rain and I'm thinking, if I happen to die tonight in my sleep, I'll have come and not blood on my hand. La 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 la.
In particular, I have just an enormous amount of fondness for that first album, and the innocence and the but the intelligence,
mm-hmm.
but not overplaying it, you know. Yeah, like I say, I think Dan could just make anyone's day better. I like the way he sees the world.
Yeah. He's quite an intriguing character as well.
He is. He's full of surprises.
Yeah.
I went on tour with him and there would always just be like, he'd always have this new... You know, he's one of these people that just has a new, a genuinely new thought every 30 seconds or so. Which I'm sure could be tiring if you live with him, but I find it intriguing and just like, this might sound a bit shit, but there's actually not an enormous number of lyricists that I admire these days. I think there's a lot of shit lyricism in the world. There's great music that has sort of okay, you know, prose or whatever attached to it. He's not one of those at all.
Yeah.
He's just someone that I admire so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have obviously quite a strong relationship with a number of Scottish musicians, namely Twilight Sad, Jetpacks.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to see Twilight Sad and when they were with The Cure.
Oh, we did.
How was that seeing them? For you, because James came in and did the podcast with
me
last time,
right?
And he spoke about how you and Grant had seen, and he said that that was a really special moment for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny how it was just like, oh, I'm just used to it now. You know, it's like you've seen them posting about the playing of The Cure, but I remember the night James told me, and I was like, okay. And then, just seeing them not only play in that setting, but like thrive in that setting. I don't know. I mean, I'm just unbelievably proud.
Yeah.
There's no other word for it. I think they're getting finally what they deserve, you know?
Yeah.
To see how much it meant to James as well, that we were there, and his dad and his mum were both there, and they've been incredibly supportive, not just of them, but of us. It's, like, strange to think back. I remember we were playing in old stereo.
Yeah.
And it was a three-piece. And then there were these guys in leather jackets that were talking to my then-girlfriend. I was like... we joke about how they looked like T-Birds from Greece. Is that right?
Yeah.
And they've changed their look now. It's all Doc Martens and black. I guess that's the outfit for The Cure tour. But
is Divine now drummer? For anyone that doesn't know Divine, he's still a bit T-Bird though.
Oh yeah, aye, yeah. He's definitely he's collar up. He's got a good set of chops as well on him.
He does.
I would call him. He's more of a mod actually. We'd go and see the Stone Roses in a flash. You know, he's probably got a ticket for Hamden already.
Yeah.
But and then they tried to tell us who they were because they'd been told by Alex at Fat Cat to come and see us and. That was like this weird point where, but that night after I realised they weren't trying to hit on my girlfriend, we started talking about where Scottish music was sort of falling short for us at that point in time, and not to be dismissive of it, it was just not. I think stuff like Franz Ferdinand had brought in a wave of music that relied less on emotion and a lot more on style.
Mad rock.
And, you know, that has its place, but yeah. I think at the time we were all... the both of us were kind of seeking a slightly deeper resonance within what we were making. Everything is driven to counteract what's popular at that point in time as well. Especially in Glasgow, you can see it. And it's like, it happened with us as well. It's like, you know, a bunch of upstarts with drum pads start flipping the V's to Frightened Rabbit and Twilight Sad because that's the way it should be. Like, I'm perfectly happy with that. And But at the time, like, we were just sort of looking for something else.
And is there a particular song of theirs that kind of resonates with you or something that stands out?
Walking for 2 hours
right.
is my favourite song that they've ever done.
Why can't they make a song and see the other one?
The Room as well, I really love.
Yeah.
Their songs are intrinsically linked with all sorts of other stuff as well.
Right.
You know, it's like listening to Walking for 2 hours. I remember just feeling utterly depressed at how good it was. As they put it on when we were at a party, we'd only done their first album at that point, and I was like, oh my god, I can't believe this comes from where I live.
Is there, apart from Max Richter you've named, is there another album that you tend to always go back to? That just makes you feel a bit safer?
A little bit safer. Yeah, I mean, Alligator by The National.
Oh my god.
Is a really big one for me. I thought it's funny, I really enjoy what they've done since, but there's something it's sort of them on like a full abandon.
Yeah.
Favorite song of all time, and I I just love the mixture of kind of intelligence and thoughtlessness on that album. Like they just kind of let fly a lot of the time. So I know it's not. I know it's not the most referred to national album, but I think it's.
It's definitely.
I think it's
the
best.
Yeah,
I think it's their best. Yeah.
The best. And so back to obviously what we were initially talking about. When, at what point did you remember the day or the moment that you kind of briefly touched upon it when you just thought, right, I need to fucking sort this out now. I need to get myself together after the panic attacks and the drinking.
Yeah, you know, that didn't happen that quickly. I made the mistake of going seeking help and then thinking I was okay. So, and that lasted for a little while. I was...
And so what did you do? How did you
see it? I went to see a therapist.
Yeah.
And he, I don't know if it was good or bad, but he gave me the test where to determine if you're an alcoholic or not, and I was totally low on the scale. So I was like, fucking great, I'm all right. And I took that away. I was on medication, beta blockers, for a bit. I don't think it should have been, because I was drinking as well. And I think I went, so a bit, basically sought a bit of help, felt a little bit better, and then continued with my life as it was almost,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I'd sort of ticked a few boxes. And honestly, it wasn't until this year that I actually truly got to grips with it. You know, that's, we're talking like 2 years of not knowing or just not giving enough of a shit to go and sort it out, to then coming to a complete head this year. And then now I really feel like I've got a handle on the whole thing, which is amazing, because I can go, you know, I can go and get drunk knowing that the next day's not going to be amazing, but it's not going to be disastrous.
So for people listening, obviously you say that you've got a handle on it. How did you do that? Because people will be like, right,
well,
you know, I need to know.
If you can, and it's not like enormously expensive. I mean, I went away for a full week of counselling.
Right.
Every day I went in, and this was at a sort of breaking point, so I went to the extreme, but I kind of had to. But I cannot recommend talking to someone enough. You know, like you. It's hard because you can't. You know, you've probably experienced it as well. Where like you just feel guilty talking to your friends about this. You're supposed to be enjoying each other's company, especially in the band. I'm like, well, everyone else is in the same position as me, so I can't. How can I complain about this? And it's not complaining. It's just.
I get embarrassed.
It's embarrassing, yeah.
And I feel stupid, and I just think, okay, you've got enough of your own problems, you don't need me bothering you with what I'm going through.
Totally.
So.
But there are people paid to listen to that shit.
Yes.
And it's,
I've paid for it.
Yeah. No, and it's 100% worth it. I would say for the, you know, if alcohol is a problem for you, if alcohol causes you problems, then eradicate it for a little while.
Yeah.
I did that, and now I know where my level is. Now I know when I should and should not drink, because before, I know now I should drink when I'm happy, and then that night's just going to be great, and I can, you know, feel a little bit of remorse the next day, but not even close to when I drink because I'm unhappy.
Yeah.
And that's just like a recipe for disaster. If you know, you'll be amazed at how much support you can get from your friends and family. The initial point of telling them is difficult. I think a lot of people, as I did, like, kind of melt down first in the run up to, there's this pressure, like, I want to tell someone, I want to say something, and then it ends up becoming a meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this embarrassing amount of concern, which in itself isn't really that helpful. It's like, okay, stop looking at me now.
Yeah.
I'm going to sort it out, stop looking at me.
Yeah, and then that puts you off telling them as well.
It does. But just one person, maybe you don't have to tell everyone.
No.
You know, reach out to someone who you think understands you. I'm sure they do. Don't go on social media and talk about it just yet. You know what I mean? Like, what you wrote was brilliant. It was measured, and it was like, and that was after the fact.
Yeah, but I think I've wasn't got written drunk in a, as well and put up stuff, and I've gone the next day.
I've done it.
Well, I think we've all done it. I think there's quite a large pool of us, especially in Glasgow as well.
Yeah.
And but in those moments, I don't regret doing those things either. I'm just like, that was part of a cry for help, so I don't really give a shit.
No, yeah, totally. No, it was part of mine as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of regretful for a little bit, but you just have to make your thoughts heard. You can't let them rattle around in your brain, because you've got like this horrible echo chamber up there that just makes things infinitely worse the more you think and think and think.
I think on the grand scheme of things, though, when you do experience those moments and you just have this kind of regret, I think you just have to think about things on a wider scale, and it's like, half these people will not give a shit about this
no.
the next day. It'll be like, at least I'm not a paedophile, at least I haven't murdered anyone.
Well, there is that. Yeah, there's always that.
And a meteor could hit the earth at any time.
I know. Actually, one of the most helpful thoughts I got from a therapist at the time was to sort of float up way above the earth. I guess you're flying, essentially. And look at how insignificant you are.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. I think actually this year I've taken, you know, a turn towards like nihilism or something, because none of it matters.
No.
You know, we don't matter.
No.
I don't fucking matter. It, you know, I'm sorry to say, you don't fucking matter. And, just understand your place.
Yeah.
And don't let it, because I think the easy thing to do is to get so caught up in what you're supposed to be doing and what, who am I? That kind of thing. Those big questions that don't really need to be asked, because in the end, you're a dead person.
Yeah. Hi!
Hi, yeah, no.
And one thing I forgot to ask you, how did you discover that it was a panic attack that you'd had on the plane?
I think it was our manager at the time, who, Storm Whitby Grubb, who had dealt with and continues to deal with a lot of issues with that.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
So, yeah, she's been really outspoken, and she stepped in, was an incredible friend and a really good colleague, who explained what had happened pretty much, and told me what to do. You know, unfortunately, I didn't like get fully better at that point in time, but she was really, really helpful. So
did you not find some relief, though, in knowing that that was what was happening to
Well,
you?
That made it much more controllable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nobody in the band knew what had happened. I don't know. I tried to say to our tour manager, like, I was like, he was sitting just there, and I was like, I'm not okay, man. I don't know what's going on, but I'm not okay. I think I'm going to keel over. And I was like, kept on getting up to go to the toilet just to like look at myself in
yeah.
the mirror and understand what I looked like shit. And then I landed. We were flying to Lollapalooza, landed in Chicago, and Storm was there, and she was like, "You've had a panic attack."
Yeah.
And then from that point, at least, I was able to understand it when it happened again. I took my first. This year was my first time, like, since that had happened, that I'd taken a flight without having drugs.
Right.
Because I'd been on Xanax for flights ever since, and then I thought, I think I've I think I've nailed this now.
Yeah,
so.
I just ended up with a bottle of wine for Primavera.
I mean, you know,
I just wanted to get through it.
Flying's just, yeah, I mean,
I hate flying anyway.
I don't
so.
Like it very much.
No.
But it was a big goal of mine to like finally overcome that what happened at that point
yeah.
in time. And I think that's a really kind of the pertinent point is, well, first of all, it's not going to kill you.
No.
You know, I thought I was dying that first time. I didn't know what was happening to me, but I now know it's not going to.
No.
So.
It's a good thing. It's your body just preparing you, isn't
it?
It
is, isn't it? Yeah.
Walks amongst you all, you tired human beings. He's got all the things a cripple has, not two working arms and legs. And vital parts fall from his system and dissolve in Scottish rain. Vitally, he doesn't miss him, he's too fucked up to care. Was that you in front of me? Coming back for even more, exactly the same. You must be a masochist. The love of modern laughter, I'm his last leg. I'm his last leg. Crippled your heart 100 times and still can't work out why. You see, I've got this disease, I can't shake and I'm just rattling through life. Oh, well, this is how we do things now, yeah, this is how the modern stays scared. So I cut all the good stuff, yeah, I cut my food. By my
that's a variable.
Yeah.
I'm quite pernickety about how it comes across and how it sounds to me, and I can't it's actually a very rare night where I can just let go and enjoy it fully. Those are the most special times to me, where I'm like, oh my god, I didn't think about anything, I just enjoyed myself. I would say, like, unfortunately, 50% of the time I'm overthinking it.
Is there a song for you that maybe sums up the last kind of 12 months at all, that aside from obviously the really significant ones that you've mentioned, that...
Yes, Folk Arp by Minor Victories. I was at Latitude this summer, and yes, I think I was on a, I had a horrific hangover because we'd played on the Saturday and this was the Sunday, but I felt good. It was a really lovely weekend, apart from my inflatable bed had sunk in the night. But we went to see them really early in the day, and I just stood there, and during that song, I just involuntarily, as is often the case, started crying. And it never happens to me. Like, I think that's maybe Sigur Rós, Neil Young, and Minor Victories being the only bands that have.
I don't know anyone that's
done that to me.
Sigur Rós, though.
I know. Yeah.
Not that that doesn't make you cool or anything. It's just that.
I know. I'm aware. It's like, it's really hard not to. But that took me by surprise, that song as well. So that's like wonderful drama. And that one, I've gone back to that again. Just sort of recapture that feeling of like letting go.
I have to ask the what's coming up question.
Yeah. Well, we, I think essentially next year, we've been in this album tour cycle for quite a long time, and I think what we really want to do next year is widen the scope of what we are and what we're doing. So not necessarily going into straight into album number 6.
That's crazy when you say album number 6.
Yeah, I know. Or 7 for me. I've done a little one on the side as well. So, there's one particular thing next year that I can't talk about right now, really. But everyone will know about it fairly soon. And then I need to do my... And Tom Goldflake Paint will know about this. I want to rewrite the soundtrack to Terminator 2 and live score it. I want to do that next year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you want to put that out publicly?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, no. Oh,
My other half is, when he hears this, he's going to be quite excited. When he hears that someone wants to do that.
I want
to
do it. So here's the plan. I've talked about it with Andy Saad as well. He seems in, if he's not too busy, fucking about with The Cure. So I think he'd be an amazing collaborator on this, but then also want to do a pitch-perfect true version of You Could Be Mine by Guns N' Roses, right in the middle of this kind of soundscapey. I want to avoid it sounding, because, you know, it's too easy to make a post-rock soundtrack.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm really keen to avoid. I love Mogwai, but it shouldn't sound like Mogwai.
No.
So we're trying to figure out a way of kind of steering away from that. But I want that to happen next year.
I'm actually lost for words. In a good way.
Good.
Yeah.
Great.
Wow. I hope it actually does. I hope that they'll do, the Glasgow Film Festival do, a special screening with that actually accompanying it.
Exactly.
That would be incredible.
That's what I want to happen. It's so we can get a version of Terminator 2 with the score taken off and we can live score it.
Jesus Christ.
Wouldn't that be something?
I'd, the amount of money you could make for charity.
Yeah.
Or for yourselves.
Charity's good. We'll be right back.
So I just want to kind of finish off on like how we started. What do you want to, you're obviously being quite outspoken about the anxiety and panic attacks and mental health in general now. Are you hoping to just obviously talk about this just to make it known on a wider scale that people don't think that they're freaks? And
yeah, definitely. I mean, I actually, if you know, I've never felt less alone than when I had a bit of an outburst, you know. I didn't plan it that way, I didn't want it to be that way. I think there's better ways of going about it, but you'll be amazed at how many people are there for you. So it's icky to make it all public.
In what way do you mean though, public?
Oh, well, in my sense, like, you know, getting on Twitter and talking about it.
But I kind of really respected you for that, and I got really angry with some of the headlines that came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I just thought, you're fucking semen. And some of the people that were just, you know, oh, I just want a headline, just that,
yeah, I know.
You know, clickbaiting bullshit.
There was that in there.
But it was just the way that they'd actually, and I actually did put a tweet up about how pissed off I was, just because obviously I identified with what you were going through. But I think I was glad that you did it, and I think, I don't know, is it fair to say that you're probably maybe quite glad that you did it as well?
Yeah. No, yes. You know, yeah, I think that I would stress that there are better ways to go about it, but I didn't really have a choice at the time. And yeah, and I think, well, what is it, you know, mental illness in one form or another is like, it's second only to cancer now.
Yeah.
And I believe that the problem is more people need to see it as something that needs attention to be fixed, and it's not, you can't just do it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, the whole kind of pull your socks up and get on with life sort of thing is not applicable. If people can see it as, you know, an affliction in the same way as like heart disease or cancer or, you know, anything, or a fucking cold, you know, it's the same, it comes under the same.
Thank you so much for speaking to me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been lovely and good, and I hopefully this will help other people. And yeah,
I hope so too.
The perfect place may never exist, may never exist. The perfect time might be years and years away. The city is overweight and it's perfect.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.